From Latrobe to Warren, Williamsport to Punxsutawney, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, small businesses have been hit especially hard by mandatory business closure and stay-at-home orders. Gordon Denlinger from the National Federation of Independent Business is here to talk about what help is available. The program helps both man and man's best friend get their lives back on track. Joe Geiger of the First Nonprofit Foundation talks with Rob Rosa of New Leash on Life about his personal journey from a life of crime to a life helping others. And the legislative response to recovering from the coronavirus crisis should be timely, temporary, and targeted. So says Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Gordon Denlinger from the National Federation of Independent Business in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. It's not getting a lot of attention with coronavirus news dominating the headlines, but this past week was Local Government Week in Pennsylvania. David Sanko, who heads the Pennsylvania State Association of Township Supervisors, reminded residents that local governments are the boots on the ground during a time of crisis. He added, local governments provide police, fire, and emergency medical services, as well as ensure essential services like water, sewer, and trash collection continue. Like virtually everything else, the purchase of wine and spirits from Pennsylvania's Monopoly liquor stores has been upended during the COVID-19 crisis. Brick-and-mortar stores have been closed for weeks, but the state opened for online sales last week. The system quickly became overloaded by users. Nearby states, especially West Virginia, have begun cracking down on Pennsylvania residents purchasing liquor and taking it back over the border. In the meantime, a number of craft breweries and local wineries are offering home delivery until the crisis is brought under control. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Mandatory business closures have resulted in tens of thousands of small businesses either closing or losing a significant portion of their business in recent weeks, and the problem has been made worse by confusion at the state level. Here to talk about what programs are available to help small businesses weather the storm is Gordon Denlinger. Gordon is Executive Director of the National Federation of Independent Business in Pennsylvania. Gordon, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Gordon, of course, small businesses particularly hard hit during this whole coronavirus pandemic. The federal government has passed the Federal CARES Act, and it does provide a number of programs for small business. Can you talk a little bit about what is available to help small businesses through this pandemic?
Absolutely, Loman. There were three bills that were passed to try to bring relief. They call them COVID 1, 2, and 3, which is sort of the Washington terms for them. But the EIDL, Economic Injury Disaster Loans, were the first phase of that, and those are out there and available on the SBA website, and there is a small grant component to that system, rates of 3.75% under that, and that was the COVID one, or about $8.3 billion first bill that was passed. Second was COVID two, which is the FFCRA, Families First Corona Relief Act, which in essence put in place a paid leave system for employees, two weeks, 10 days, mandated to be paid by the federal government, paid through payroll tax system backwards credits, if you will, through payroll taxes to the employers. And that provides that relief system. And then beyond the 10 days, there's a partial that extends on out an extended period of time. Embedded in that was a boost to Pennsylvania's unemployment comp system beyond the normal 50% of your rate pay would be a $600 boost on top of that on a per weekly basis. So a significant dollar boost in that under unemployment. So that whole system was COVID two. And then you mentioned, the CARES Act, or COVID three, as some call it, which is the $2.2 trillion relief package, and embedded in that for small business employers under 500 in size was a $350 billion component called the PPP, Paycheck Protection Program loan system. And that's the big kahuna, if you will, for small business owners. That's the place to go for the more substantial relief. That is being administered through SBA, but out to banks and credit unions. And so that came up on the 3rd of April. And so that system, a lot of bumps and creaks and groans trying to get it rolled out. I know all of our banking and credit union folks have burned the midnight oil to try to work through the process of it. But there are 3,200 member institutions nationwide that can lend the PPP, and small business owners want to be working with their bank or credit union lending agents to avail themselves of those applications and those funds. We do know that in the first couple of days, about $61 billion of that $350 was approved for payment. Average loan sizes are about $325,000. Most of the applications by industry type, construction leads the way in that first $61 billion, with about $9 billion of it. Manufacturing was second with about $7 billion. So those are the biggest two groups of small businesses that have gone after it. But those are the three bills that rolled through D.C. But the big one, as I say, is the PPP under the CARES Act.
We are talking with Gordon Denlinger, who is Executive State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business here in Pennsylvania. So now, Gordon, let's talk a bit about Pennsylvania. And there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of debate in Harrisburg over the last week about starting to loosen some of the restrictions, get Pennsylvania back to work, particularly in the construction industry. Are there any hopeful signs that we might start getting the construction industry back up and running?
Loman, that's a big one. And I'm really glad you brought that up, because that is a place where we, NFIB, and many stakeholders would say, you know, it's very possible to do outside type work or safely distance and get those people back doing construction work, both residential, commercial, what have you. So absolutely. And other states have handled that area better than Pennsylvania. That needs to be said. So House Speaker Mike Terzai has introduced the House Bill 2400 to do just that, to get construction moving again. And we're really calling on the governor to take a fresh look at that again, acknowledging the health issues, but we believe that this could be done safely, and some of these people that are stranded could be put back to work, and critical construction needs could move forward. You know, projects that were stalled midway through could move forward. So anything we can do to try to effectively deal with the health risk, but also get some folks back working again, and that's a big one.
Among the programs that haven't gone well is this whole waiver process, where the governor and his administration decided to label some businesses as life-sustaining, others non-life-sustaining, created mass chaos. There's been waivers. The waiver process has been anything but transparent. Is there any hope that that process is going to be opened up and some light shed, at least on how we got where we are?
The waiver process, we thought, was one positive that the governor, when he went down this road of not arbitrarily, but in essence, sort of mandating from the top this, as you said, life-sustaining, non-life-sustaining, one-size-fits-all program on open enclosures. But the waiver process was the only kind of relief valve on the whole thing. You know, if you are in a business that's in the gray zone, you think you might be sort of life-sustaining, maybe for the industries that you support, who are first-tier health frontline types of businesses. You know, that waiver process gave people an avenue to try to say, hey, you know, we are actually critical, but it doesn't appear, you know, that way on our sign over our door. Can we get some latitude here? And for some reason unknown, the governor slammed the door shut on that. That also closed April the 3rd at 5 o'clock, and 36,000 businesses statewide had applied, and some number were approved, some were denied, some were told, you know, you're okay, you're on the list, you don't need a waiver. But it was at least, you know, an avenue for people to go through. and try to get some answers and potentially some relief. And for whatever reasons, the governor has slammed the door shut and pretty much refused to answer the all-important question of why doesn't the waiver process continue. And our contention has been, respecting the health crisis issue, that employers have a vested interest in keeping their workers healthy. I mean, they're not going to put them in harm's way if it shuts the whole enterprise down. So trust the people, trust employers to do the right thing. And following CDC guidelines, we think more could be done to free up the economy a little bit and get some people back to work.
You mentioned the fact that employers are going to be concerned about the health of their employees. And a lot of employers, Gordon, are being very creative, very entrepreneurial here in the process, sometimes starting whole new lines of business. There's one company in particular, a bus company, that has reinvented itself. So let's try to end a little bit on a hopeful note. What have they been doing?
Bailey Coach down in York County is the company you're referencing. And they, John Bailey and the crew down there, of course, you know, they're a tour bus company. So the cancellations started coming and they were just thrown back on their heels. So all of a sudden, in excess of 50 employees that he had to lay them virtually all off. But John was sitting there at his desk, saw a bottle of disinfectant sitting off to the side, and he thought, you know, we have this high-priced, high-powered disinfecting unit that we use on our buses, and he had bought that in relation to the H1N1 scare back some time ago. And he thought, you know, maybe we can put some equipment together and go out and start disinfecting daycare centers and banks and other places that are still operating if there's a need. And so he sent out the word, we're open for business. The calls started rolling in. He brought back 7, 8. I think he's up to 10 people now. So you say, well, where are we? What can we do to adjust? And that's what small business people do. They say, how can we make the best out of a tough situation? How can we help our community? And that's so hats off to Bailey Coach down in New York for that creative solution. And we're hearing other accounts. Folks reach for the best in dark times and difficult hours, and we're seeing that happen in many places.
Gordon Denlinger with the National Federation of Independent Business. Gordon, tell us just a little bit about NFIB. Also, where can folks go on the web so that they can access information about all the federal and state programs that you've been discussing?
NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, is the voice of small business. 13,000 members strong here in Pennsylvania and getting stronger. And our job is just to raise the voice, and that's pushing on our Harrisburg and D.C. elected officials on economic issues, free enterprise issues, and also be a conduit of information. As you mentioned, Loman, the place to go for the national NFIB connection would be nfib.com. For Pennsylvania-specific information, it would be nfib/PA would be the place to go. And there's all kinds of great information on these programs, webinars, other things that are available to everybody. But we do hope folks will see the value of an association like NFIB and join with us and be a part.
Gordon Denlinger from the National Federation of Independent Business. Gordon, thank you for being here.
Good to be with you.
A judge said he was a career criminal who would never amount to anything. But Rob Rosa of New Leash on Life proved him wrong. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation talks with Rob about how caring for dogs helped him turn his own life around. Joe?
Thank you, Loman. Thank you, Rob, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program. This is really part two of an interview that we did previously on a program called New Leash on Life. Today we're going to talk with Rob about what his experience was from a user perspective. When a common pleas court judge labeled Rob Rosa a career criminal at age 16, it seems she had plenty of evidence to back her up. He had started experimenting with drugs at age 9, entered the criminal justice system at 13, and spent much of the next 5 years perfecting his criminal skills in juvenile institutions and practicing them on the outside. 2 years later, reviewing his record of selling drugs, assault, and theft, a second judge pronounced him beyond rehabilitation and sentenced him to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, where he would spend the next 12 years of his young adult life. So, Rob, a pretty bleak start there. What were you thinking at the time? What were you going through? And what started to turn your life around?
Being a person living in addiction, I was pretty much not hopeful. And being stigmatized and labeled didn't help very much to guide me towards any hope for change. I would say around 2000, I volunteered to do a dog program at Greater Fort. And this dog program essentially just was focused on training the dogs. It didn't provide any type of services for the people.
So Greater Fort's one of our high security prisons here in Pennsylvania.
Yes. Okay. Yes. State Penitentiary. That's where I basically spent my young adult life. And for the first few years that I was incarcerated, I still believed that I needed to live up to those labels that were provided, given to me in terms of career criminal, because I believed those things. These were very influential, powerful people that were saying these things about me. So I believed that this is who I was. But when I joined this program, it was volunteer. I was working on the farm, and they brought me a dog that they said that it was going to be euthanized. It was adopted from a shelter and surrendered back 3 times. And, you know, because it destroyed things in the house. It had no training. And I basically identified with that dog. I felt like, you know, this dog was just misunderstood and lacked some guidance and direction in his life.
So he was much like you at the time.
He was. In fact, the very first evening that I spent with him, we had a dog run within the yard that we used to take the dogs out to. And the dog run had about a 4-foot fence. And I had the dog in there. And once the lights went on the big wall, we were not allowed to walk outside of the confined space of that building. But obviously the dog did not know the rules of the prison. So, you know, while I was talking to another one of my peers that was out in the yard with me, the dog jumped over the 4-foot fence and bolted towards the front of the building. And I forgot that I was an inmate in a maximum security prison at the time. And my first thought was, I can't lose this dog on my first day. So I started to chase the dog. Now, it's dark out, and the dog is a black lab mix, and I have this very bright gray prison outfit on, so you can imagine what went on while I'm chasing that dog down the road. We ultimately caught the dog, and the dog must have felt some tension, because when we got into the cell, the dog went into the crate, and I sat down, and I looked at the dog, and I said, "You almost got me killed." And in that moment, he started to creep out of the crate, and he started to walk towards me. And I looked at him, and I said, "I don't know what you're doing." And he walked over to me, and I said, "I'm not going to pet you." And he put his head on my lap. And I turned away. I said, "I'm not going to pet you."
So you basically were lying.
Yeah, because when I looked at him, and he's looking at me with those emerald brown eyes, I could not help but to pet him. In that moment, I told myself, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Rob Rosa. Rob, today you're the Associate Vice President of Operations for an organization called New Leash on Life USA, or New Leash, a program that helps provide second chances to people experiencing incarceration and rescued shelter dogs. Fill in the blanks a little bit from that first experience with the black lab with you in prison to where you are today and the kinds of things you're doing with yourself.
In 2005, I was up to make parole, and the executive director of that organization that I was volunteering for, she heard that I was up to make parole. And because she recognized the talent that I had and the dedication that I had. I had trained 3 dogs thus far for that program. She offered me a job with that organization, which was something that they never really did. 2005 when I made parole, I started working with that organization. And in the little bit of time that I was with them, I helped them to get accredited by Assistance Dog International. But then I took a job closer to home here in Philadelphia just to be closer to family with the City Shelter Philadelphia here at Animal Control. And it's where I met a volunteer there who was the founder, who is the founder and CEO of New Leash on Life USA. I'm very lucky and I feel humbled to be a part of this program because I feel it is my life. Every time we start a session and work with these individuals, I see my life replay itself out, and I see hope for these people that we work with.
You really have gone on and become a productive citizen in the community, but more impressive to me, the number of people's lives that you're helping turn around today.
I've been incredibly fortunate, and it's all possible because of the wonderful people that I surround myself with, that I work with, and the support that they provide me, encouragement, and the opportunity. But it's also that the City of Philadelphia provided me the opportunity to come home and be a returning citizen, productive to society.
Rob, let me close this segment with, if you were to come across a 9-year-old in the streets today who's where you were at the time, what advice would you give them?
I would say that it's incredibly important to focus on education. It's incredibly important to listen to their parents and those positive role models in their life. But I would also say that it's incredibly important to love themselves, respect themselves, and to always set goals for themselves.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program with Rob Rosa. Rob, tremendous story. You're now the Associate Vice President of Operations for New Leash on Life USA. Rob, my guess is a lot of people out there listening to this program is sending you a lot of love today. Thank you for being a guest on our program.
Thank you so much.
Pennsylvania's annual budget process is underway, and it's been thrown into disarray by the coronavirus pandemic. On this week's American Radio Journal commentary, Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania outlines how we should respond.
The COVID-19 pandemic has now been topping our headlines and topping our minds for over a month. Much has been made about the different tactics, policies, and executive orders that governors, administrations, and legislatures have instituted or, conversely, failed to enact. The guideposts we've outlined at both the federal and state level when it comes to COVID-specific actions are that they're timely, temporary, and targeted. What do we mean by timely and temporary? Well, that any fiscal response or policy changes should be closely tied to the impact and duration of the COVID-19 crisis. And what do we mean by targeted? These responses should be limited in scope. Lawmakers should avoid approving measures that usurp the roles that can more effectively be played by governments at a more local level, by the private sector, or by our communities. Ideas that increase government contributions are going to percolate in state capitals across the country, and our chapters will be watching and weighing in with alternatives if these measures offend the notions of actions being timely, temporary, and targeted. As our vision for economic opportunity has been and continues to be, we seek to empower people to earn their success. We know that this will be tougher for folks to do the longer businesses stay closed, and if our legislature considers a budget that increases taxes to cover the declining revenues the state will inevitably realize, sales tax revenues and income tax revenues will fall. The letter Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania sent to the leaders of the House and Senate, knowing that Pennsylvania was just beginning to navigate the budget process when COVID-19 hit, included the following fiscal recommendations to consider in a budget that reflects the reality of the changed landscape. First, state appropriations. While sales and use taxes and income tax collections will assuredly drop, it is important that we do not increase taxes at this time. Because we have not passed budget appropriations, now is the time to eliminate all spending that is not absolutely necessary, such as corporate welfare line items, and use that revenue for operating expenses of necessary programs that help those affected by the coronavirus. Pension funding. Pennsylvania is in the midst of passing appropriations to fund necessary coronavirus relief, and it is important that we do not divert pension funding. State pensions were hardly recovered from the 2008-09 recession. As recently as January, states were proposing to reduce pension annual required contributions and further push out repayments. Just as private retirement accounts have suffered in the past few weeks, so are public pensions. Rainy day funds. Rainy day funds are essential for fiscal health. While no state could have foreseen this type of an economic calamity, very few were prepared for even the slightest economic speed bump. In 2018, nearly half of all states had fewer rainy day reserves than in 2007. 13 states had reserves to last fewer than 10 days. Commonwealth Foundation estimates our rainy day funding will sustain our budget for just 3.5 days. At the other end of this, putting funding in rainy day funds should be of utmost importance, which would be all the more possible if we advanced House Bill 1316, which would cap and tie spending to revenue growth. That is Representative Ryan Warner's Taxpayer Protection Act. The three distinct considerations by lawmakers around the COVID-19 crisis have been to address the healthcare emergency and mitigation efforts, and then planning for our nation's period of economic recovery post-pandemic. Together, we can embrace a path forward in Pennsylvania that limits spending to what is absolutely needed and considering every measure possible to get Pennsylvanians back to work by passing occupational licensing reform and regulatory reform measures so we can lessen the burden on Pennsylvania workers as they return to the workforce and businesses as they reopen. To find us on Facebook, search at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director for Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WHHS-FM in Haverton, along with WCCS-AM and WLCY-AM in Indiana, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.